Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Blog Talk Radio, everybody. My name is Lawrence Drank, aka Sparky Lee, whatever you want to call me. I am a host. Are you there, Kimberly?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, cool. Sorry, I have tech issues with this thing. My name is, sorry guys, I'm looking at my computer and stuff. Kimberly, are you there? I'm sorry.
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, yeah, my computer for some reason is messing up on me. So we were talking about reentry, folks, and just the struggles of, you know, what do we do after we come out? And one of the things, most importantly for the family members, I really do want to give a huge shout out for everything that y'all are doing and just the emotional stress that comes with doing time with somebody, even though you did nothing wrong. And that's just so powerful to the people that are beginning this journey. So I really do want to let you guys know you're not alone. 1 in 6 family members experience mass incarceration. 1 in 12 have a family member in the military. So if you really think about it, as me and Kimberly were just talking about, you know, with one person, it's a movement, with everybody, it's a force. And we are a force to be reckoned with. We are bigger than the military. So imagine if we all got together and pushed forward in one direction with one voice. And made it one fight. I mean, it would be truly amazing of what we could accomplish just overnight. So, you know, we're talking about reentry. And, you know, for me, after being 20 years in California State Prison, it was one of the things that part of my success today is because I reentered society while I was doing time. Even though I was released homeless and I had no resources, I still had the mindset that I was going to be free, remain free, and stay free. That was my goal, and we had a motto, at all costs. So, you know, going and veering off the left and the right was not an option. And today, I have a full-time job. I have my own vehicle. I have my own home. You know, I'm doing very well. So, you know, but we're talking about the reentry before they get out. What are we teaching these men and women before they come home? Not just a checkbook, not just, we have to learn navigation on the web. We have to learn emails. We have to learn how to operate a phone, because everything's smartphone. So, so we have a special guest, Kimberly, and she is part of the movement, Prison to Purpose. And we have a 918. Do you have a comment or question? Or no question? Okay. Kimberly, go ahead.
Yeah, well, yeah, I had some of the same issues, man, coming out. It was horrible. I didn't do as much time. I did altogether 4 years. But in my community, that was, you know, at the drop, moving back to rural Mississippi, man, with nothing, when I say, you know, not having really the family structure or support, you know, at one time being a beacon of hope for the family, you know, I had a mortgage company, the idea of family, the husband, the wife, the kids, the ticket fences, the big, you know, homes, and cars. We drove pretty much where we wanted. We ate pretty much where we wanted. And I did all of those things, and to turn around, but, you know, coming from the drug family, you know, being accustomed to certain livelihoods, but then wanting to be the person to change things, you know, from demographics, from being molested, being raped, you know, just the ugly things. But, you know, coming back to my own hometown, man, where I was born and raised back, and, you know, wanting to be the change that I wanted to see, you know, and I didn't really understand what it would take to get that, you know. Some homeless nights from being in a big house, a castle, my dream home I built from the ground up, to being homeless, man. Can't go to people where I help people get homes, family members get homes. I couldn't spend a night on the couch, you know. Dealing with the mental, you know, then all the trauma of life kind of beset you at one time, you know, still having a flicker of hope that poses you to keep, that you have to kind of endure, you know, through those things so that you can be the person, you know, that you want to see for the change, for the help of other people. Because in my community, man, seeing is believing, you know. Seeing is believing, you know. If I saw a person and that person that changed, because we didn't outweigh, you know, I didn't outweigh the next female or next person in my community. You know, we all kind of was impacted with the same things. You know, most of us came from single family homes. You know, most of us had been molested, you know, just a whole lot of things. But, you know, choosing to go through all of that because for some odd reason, you know, feeling like, you know, I had been a menace to society, that I wanted to be something different because I was smart, I was pretty, you know, and I was very outgoing and courageous, you know, to be even chosen to endure such things. So turning it all around to be, you know, to just be crazy enough, man, to believe and to still believe today that, you know, I go every day, you know, with what I have, what I wake up to, and it's even 7-8 years out of prison, man, I still don't have it together because I choose to iron out kinks here, you know, in rural Mississippi, in Alabama, in Georgia. I spend my time moving around, you know, reorganizing and trying to restructure a community. But what I wasn't taught was that I had to learn how to forgive myself. And only then, you know, can you really be the change you want to see, because people don't accept us. And then we don't get the help and support that we need coming out, you know, mentally. The mental challenges, you know, and it's not good, you know, to cover things up or sweep things up. So being able to teach people these life strategies now and seeing, you know, that a person can call me in the middle of the night, having this phone to be working and present, you know, to answer calls, to sit down with, you know, the congressman and legislator to change the laws. But then not be able to feed myself, man, that'd be the part at night. You know, I do all the work, but I can't get a decent contract from bigger companies who are getting the money for reentry, who are getting the money for prison reform, and I don't get anything, but I do all the damn work, you know. But nevertheless, that's why I say that's where fasting and praying comes in, because I believe Miss Leona gave me your name, Sparky, some time ago, and I was just scrolling, and I just saw you again, and I was like, let me reach out to him and see maybe if you know some fellowship or somebody that may could do something, you know, to assist, or, you know, and, you know, you just keep getting up every day, man. If you know who we are, man, that's just, you know, it ain't something that we choose to do. I be wanting to bail out and get a job. Man, McDonald's won't even give me a job. Like, I done been everywhere. And these people be like, we can't give you a job. We need you to do this. I'm like, dang, you know, but how I'm going to pay my light bill, or how I'm going to eat, you know. But God is faithful, man, because it comes, and I just keep doing the work. So, and I'm grateful, you know, to be chosen to do it, man. And if I'd have had to do it, think about this 10 years ago, bro, I probably would have lost my mind. I would have overthought it. But, that's just who I am. And from prison to purpose, you know, that's the change that I have to see. you know, changing that pain into purpose and making sure that somebody else's life is, you know, they're being self-sufficient when they come out. They don't have to be homeless and struggling and hungry and, you know, running from job to job, you know, trying to find the perfect fit. Because first, mentally, you ain't right to be trying to go nowhere to work on nobody's job. You know, so teaching principles of life, man, and what it means to really live life and live a more impactful life. And teaching people that, and that's the most effective part about the movement for me, because I was gone mentally, man. I was traumatically gone. So people kept pushing and pulling at me. And then I kept pouring into people to see what, you know, what I felt that, you know, what you need to change. And so that helped me to change. And when I seen that God gave me the help, you know, I had to leave my city. I had $85. I went to Atlanta, man, on a train, $65. Still live like that, man. I had to get a train one time in Memphis, and I didn't have the money, but I packed my things and went to the train station. And it's like something in me said, go to the train station. You never know, somebody might buy your ticket. So I get there. They didn't even have a darn train station open. And the conductor said, well, you got a free ride. It's on me this time. But that's why I know I'm chosen to be here, is to do that, do those things, man. I haven't paid a light bill in 3 months, and that's why I was telling you the other day. Every day I just wake up and just hit the light, man, and just be like, okay, we're going to see how it works out, you know. But,
yeah. Well, and this is the thing, Kimberly, about advocacy. It is, we don't get paid for this. This is all volunteer basis, pretty much, unless you have the contact. And, you know, the thing I've learned is that when an advocate comes out of here on fire, and this is one of the things I've been implementing in my program and my organization, is that when one of my brothers and sisters comes home, you know, they don't work for me. They work with me. And it's giving them a piece, a platform to go forward and do what they want. And with advocacy, it's very, it's a snake pit. And I hate to say it like that. And unfortunately, you know, you have these big organizations getting all this money in these contracts, and they're doing absolutely nothing with it. We still have the same recruitment rate that we've had for the past 20 years. So it's like, and so what's really being done? And there, it's like a good old boys club. And it's very difficult to get into, and it's almost like, who you, and I hate to say it like this, but who you blow is not who you know. And so it's very difficult to be able to do this with, and still struggling with volumes on what you're going to do when it sets in place. And just like, and as a reverend, I'm gonna it's a little biblical, but you know, when God told his disciples to drop everything you have and just walk with me and have faith, you know, that's what we're doing as advocates. Sometimes, you know, we have to drop everything we're doing and trust that we're going to be provided for and we're going to be able to do what we do. But that's my whole thing, is that, you know, my issue is that everyone talks about reentry when somebody comes home. But what about when they're inside? You know, why aren't we preparing them for something bigger and greater? Why aren't we preparing them for success and permanency instead of saying, oh, hey, you're out, let's push for you. My guys, I still send curriculum to, I still talk to them, I still mentor them. My mentor program goes in before they get out. And that's why we have a 100% success rate of over 30 clients of never going back. Not one violation has happened. So, and the thing is, and that comes from a perspective of, we know what it takes as formerly incarcerated to make this movement huge. But the thing is that that's overgeneralizing, but a majority of the organizations are all about the money, and it's no different than, you know, they've turned into corporations and kind of sold out. Actually, they have sold out. So, you know, and that's why I sit in the background. I am not huge. We are nationwide, but we don't We don't advertise. We are referred by people. And so, and that's how I like to keep it. And, you know, everything that we do, I am directly involved in one way or another. And so it's just one of those things that nobody, you know, and I'm going to give some examples. Kaepernick. Nobody was ready for Kaepernick during this time. He got scrutinized. He got ousted. He had a belief. He had an idea. And everybody out there at the time sat there and said, you don't know what you're talking about. And had their voice and their opinion. That's fine. And now look at it. Now we go back and go, well, maybe he had a point. Bill Gates, Steve Jobs, you know, all these people were men before their time. You know, Harriet Tubman, you know, women. We have all these people that have done things that were non-conventional, that were, you know, that went against society standards. And that is one of the things that, you know, when we go forward and we have these ideas that nobody has thought of or implemented or genuinely even tried, we're going to run into roadblocks. And trust me, in the last 2 years that I've been doing this, we've had so many roadblocks. I've been turned down by several prisons for my program, even though I make the other programs look like crap. It's you got to know somebody, and that's unfortunate. But it's all about networking. You know, if we can sit there and give these men and women where what I like to do is I like to just make a phone call. You know, I get a name, I get a county, and a brief profile on their case factors. So when I do make phone calls and I go to this organization out, and which is a huge shout out to Megan Medlin out in Orange County for, she works for Hire, and they are amazing people over there where I can make a simple phone call and get somebody a job. I could make a phone call and get some housing. Homeboy Industry out in LA as well, you know, where they sit there and Father G, I can set an appointment where somebody walks through those doors, because that is a requirement there. And I get what I need for our people. Huh? Oh. So, you know, it's just one of those things that, you know, we have these connections everywhere. We're, you know, making a phone call and asking for assistance. And not as, it's like, it's one of those things that it doesn't have to be me. I could care less about my title as a CEO. I could care less about my title as a reverend. I could care less about any motivational speech, whatever. You know, it means absolutely nothing at the end of the day. What are we doing with these gifts, with these titles, to make sure that there's a permanency and successfulness with our men and women coming home? And as everybody knows, I was released homeless. I had nothing. I had $200 estate money, and I was living in motels. My wife had to come to drive. I'm sorry, everybody. So nobody here is muted. So if anybody has any comments or questions, just jump on in. Ask what you need to ask. Say what you need to say. There's no censorship here. It is what it is. We have a lot of people on today, and I would just want to say thank you for all the listeners for the support. And this is truly amazing. And there's a lot of people. Man, this thing's lit up. So, but if anyone's experiencing homelessness or issues with lack of resources, you know, reach out. You can go to the Legacy Program. We're on Facebook and everything else. It's all about asking for help. And, you know, when we ask for help and we get these other entities involved, that's where we can be pulled together. Like I say, we're in our direction one more. It's all about asking for help. And, you know, we asked for help. So, before Kimberly asks anything else, does anybody else have any comments or questions for Kimberly or not? All right. Okay. So, Kimberly.
Yes.
Okay. So, what are your goals to with your from prison to purpose? Right now, like, do you have short-term goals, long-term goals,
okay.
You know, reach for the stars?
Yes. Well, right now, just my short-term goals are to get my curriculum and get my contact list together.
Right.
And the third one is to just, like, kind of, you know, start making a point of contact with those people. And then my longer-term goals are building more partnerships, the networking more, to center around reimagining the justice program so that we can work as a unit, you know, with that movement and that piece, and offering more advocacy work and, you know, helping people on site mentally through pre-release, kind of getting in, helping them set some goals, kind of connecting them with those pieces. I kind of wrote down I started a connection with a junior college that will work with me to do welding, certifications, truck driving. My daughter has her own lash company where she would teach women if they wanted to go into the beauty arena. So I'm kind of putting together, like, vocational skill sets that we could do, you know, in short term. Actually looking at some real estate companies that will take some of the people who don't have, like, real violent crimes. And see, in other places, like, you know, when you get out, you don't have a record. You just kind of, like, start over, you know. But for those, like, here in Mississippi, it is, like, totally out. Like, I had a mortgage company and I did real estate. Well, I can't hold a real estate license here again, you know, but I can kind of, like, work around it, like becoming a wholesaler or an investor, but it's only, like, certain pieces that I can do. But, you know, having that piece, the School of Second Chances, and, you know, just kind of building around that, it didn't really take a whole lot, you know, just kind of finding certified people to come in and teach, but I have to have a hub. You know, like, if I'm going to do it in Mississippi, I have a hub. I can work with the junior college. But, like, in Atlanta, you know, I can kind of, you know, partner with other guys, like, who are truck drivers who can teach and have the school, or even make a contract, a connection with, like, say, for instance, Longway, which is a trucking company that offers truck driving school, and then you have to partner with them to drive. But then, you know, I have a couple of ladies that's going to prison and started their own truck driving school, so we kind of try to keep it in our own formerly incarcerated people network, so that we want to build our own network so that we can make sure our people get just what they need to be successful. So that's what From Prison to Purpose. Toot my own horn, blow the whistle when I've made it or whatever. Yeah. So being able to just pour into people, man, just being able to see that people are getting the opportunity that I wish that I had, you know, those nights I had to sleep in a park as a woman, you know, being able to make sure that another woman don't, you know, those mental issues, the things that I couldn't do, like being around crowds and being in closed, incubated places, you know, making sure that we address those things, you know, I do a group session called Circle Keepers, you know, where, you know, like, people formerly alcoholics may say, well, hi, my name is Kimberly and I'm an alcoholic. Well, no, we're formerly incarcerated people, or, you know, we just sit in a circle and, you know, hey, my name is Kimberly, and yeah, this is what I'm struggling with. This is what I am, and this is what I'm struggling with. You know, I have a problem with going into the grocery store, and there's a lot of people, and I feel like everybody's looking at me. Or I still wake up at 3:00 in the morning and have to jump up and face the wall because I think the captain's coming into the dorm, and I still get up sometimes and I face the wall. So, you know, those trauma things, you know, having those groups, you know, kind of help people to know that it's okay and that it gets better, you know, and not try to fight the demons, say alone, you know, or make me feel like I got to hide away from people because I'm having certain, you know, so those type of things, like, build a hold of, you know, just a whole array of services, you know, rap services that can help a person. And I just feel like if I had just a little of those things, that probably, you know, would have probably, you know, it probably would have helped me more, you know, head on. But I didn't have those things, so. But
come
I found
on,
them. That's a good thing. I found them.
Yeah.
Hi, I have a question.
Oh, yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yes. Hi. Hi, Sparky Lee. This is Earlene. Hi, Kimberly. And
hi
to everyone else that are listening in. I have a question for Kimberly. Kimberly,
yes.
I was listening in on the live broadcast, and I heard you say something about you didn't really have family members to support you. While you was going through what you was going through, you know, coming out of imprisonment, if I got that right, because there's a bunch of noise in the background. I'm sorry, I might have didn't catch it all. But if that is true, what would you say to those who are, say, they do have family members coming out and they don't really know, you know, they don't, you know, how would you accept rejection? Say, for instance, when you got locked up, you was strong on drugs or whatever else, and you did a lot of damage before you went in. So coming out of being behind bars for so many years, now you're a different person, you in a different angle and direction. But when you come out, some of those family members might not be ready to forgive you and stuff like that. What would you say to
Well, for me, that was some of the things, because I had hurt a lot of people. You know, we have to be able to admit those things just the same way we want people to forgive us. You know, but we have
Absolutely.
To understand that we've hurt people, you know, and that we are in recovery. You know, I can't keep continue to look at the injury, because if I keep looking at the injury, I can't focus on healing. I can't focus on recovery. So that's where we talk about pre-release, having the help we need coming out. We help people set their goals. We help people talk about the difficult things and see
right.
what their goals are and say, hey, as a mediator, I can mediate between the family and the person that's getting ready to be released. So that way, you know, we can get the family help if they think that they can be helped or if they're willing to forgive. That means, you know, we kind of mend that coming out, you know, so that way he's not set up and the family's not set up. You know what I'm saying? He may have to accept and adjust that his family's not ready to receive, but we want to help him do that beforehand so that when I get out, I'm looking for my family, and then they, like I did, and then there's nobody there, then I'm rejected again. You know what I'm saying? And that may cause me to collapse. That may call me to go back and do something crazy. You feel what I'm saying? So that's why it's so important that we do the pre-release piece, because that way we're able to do a few things with the person. And hey, if in this time that we're going to have a 6 weeks, a three consecutive time mediation before you come out, that means if we haven't worked it out in those three times, then that means that we're going to come back with my my peer, which is I'm a formerly incarcerated person, and he's going to be. So I'm going to have to go back to him as a peer and say, okay, you know, I had this to happen to me, and it's not, you know, keep praying. I don't know what your religion is, but if you don't pray about it, you know, either you got to believe that it's going to get better and wait on that, or you just got to forget about it and move forward. You know, so we help them to set those type of goals. We help them to be able to understand the process that you may have to do it alone. You know, but you have your peers of formerly incarcerated people. We're here, and we have a network of people wherever you are that's going to be able to hold you up. So that's what we want to do. That's what I'm about, because I wish that I had had that. I had to do it all alone for years. Like, I don't mean that my family wasn't there, but I had done so much that my family wasn't going. My family wasn't saying, hey, you know, hey, heck no, you're not going to do that again. My daughter was like, oh, no, you're not. I'm not letting you back in, because you're not going to hurt me again. So I've been there, done that, and that's why I say I have to be the voice for the people that you got to admit that you screwed up big time, but now you got to do it bigger to get the life back, you know. So the same way you were big enough to go out there and mess it up, you got to stand on that to get it together. To allow it to come together. Once you made the choice to get it together, you got to allow it to come together. So once you can do that, then you can move forward. whether if I'm going to move forward with my family, if I'm going to move forward with my peers and
with,
my new family, my kingdom family. You feel me? And that's just what it
mm-hmm.
is. I got it both ways. And, you know, more that helped me to get to where I am today were people like Sparky, people I never met, but people who I know that I know that
mm-hmm.
lived to be in my life, you know. So we
mm-hmm.
just got to be about that, you know. And we want to be able
okay.
to offer that to the family and to the person that's locked up, you know. So
right, right. Okay, right quickly, and one more. This one is for Sparky Lee. Now, you asked
yeah.
earlier, why aren't those incarcerated being prepared for something bigger? When I heard you guys talking about that, I said, wow, this reminds me of back in the day. I remember when people were coming out with PhDs and y'all remember that? Coming out of
yeah.
prison with all these diplomas
yeah.
and all these, okay, but by law, I think it's deeper than what the eyes can meet, because even they started passing laws that, you know, no more degrees are being met in here. No, we're not going to do that. People are coming out. In other words, you could commit murder, go in prison, get this degree, come out, make all this money when we paying college tuition $50,000 and stuff like that, you know,
mm-hmm.
to get this. And they getting it for committing a felony. You know, so we didn't
mm-hmm.
think it was right. So they tried it out, and it didn't work out to their advantage. So they
mm-hmm.
decided to cut that program, and then
yeah.
they see now well, where it lands us. What do you have to say about that, Sparky? Because that is deep. It goes into, you know, the law. This is the law that they passed.
Oh, okay. So a lot of people aren't going to like me on this one. So, look. The whole point of sorry, my computer is just zoned out. So what ends up happening is the system is not for us.
Mm-hmm.
They do everything they can. When they see success, they do what they can to keep that door going, to keep shut. Now, so it's kind of up to us to keep it going, and they find a way to make sure that revolving door stays open.
Mm-hmm.
And we, as incarcerated at the time, we get frustrated and we go, well, I'm not going to let the time do me. I'm going to do, you know, I'm not going to do the time. I'm not going to let the time do me. I'm going to do the time. So we get lazy. We get short-sighted. We get frustrated. We get defeated, supposedly, and so when a door closes, instead of looking for a window, sometimes we just sit on our bunks because it's,
right.
it's a defeating. We're powerless in there. So, it's kind of designed. It's, you know, the prison system now is under the 13th Amendment. It's slavery.
Mm-hmm.
It really is, from the wages to the how we're treated, and this and. I stay very neutral on this, is that, you know, I do say if you don't want to do the time, don't do the crime. But I also say
right.
that if while our brothers and sisters are inside, we do need to be educated. We're doing our time. We're fulfilling our promise and our contract with the state. But now when we get out, it starts new. We're off
mm-hmm.
to a fresh start. And,
mm-hmm.
I mean, that's how it should be. But unfortunately, whatever we do, is held against us, and when we're always under that thumb of never getting that righteous second chance. There is no forgiveness in when it comes to the penal code, and we kind of
right.
get boxed in. So, you know, when I was incarcerated, I educated myself. I went out, got a vocation. I got some education through college and through doing my groups, and I became a public servant. You know, I taught all my classes and did what I could, and that was what I could do at the time. And so I say to my brothers and my sisters behind those walls, to the family members that have incarcerated, you know, look for outside resources. Send them stuff to read, even if it's only 5 pages and you can't send a book. Send 5 pages at a time. Give them something to go on when they get out, because if we take the power away from our loved ones inside, and we don't educate them, they're not coming out any different than they went in. And let's keep in mind the statistics for this. Anyone that goes to the justice system from a middle or lower class They go in with a third grade education. So imagine sending an 18-year-old kid with a third grade education, average, 20 years in prison. When they get out, they're 40-something years old, or almost 40, and they still have a third grade education.
Right.
So what are we doing to educate our incarcerated? What are we doing to teach them that, you know, and that's why pre-release is so important. It has to, they have to have that support network before they get out. They have to have that mentor. They have to have that counselor. And not one of those bullshit-ass counselors where they sit there and say, how do you feel? How does it make you feel? I want to know, like, I want to have a conversation with my therapist. I just want to sit there and be like, hey, what's up, man? How you doing? You know, and so that's kind of like how I counsel these days, is that I just have a conversation like, hey, what's going on? Of course, I'm writing my notes. They don't know it. But, you know, I'm sitting there like, therapy needs to be through education and through mentorship.
Right. Because they can receive you more coming from a more realistic.
Than
the fake stuff. Because, you know, how many times, you know, man, I had to get up. And I would go out, y'all, literally put a wig. Somebody donated me a wig when I first got out when I was working in Atlanta. And the ladies there that embraced me, and when I ended up on a train, I ended up beside Tana Bethany. She used to be a prostitute out of New Orleans, but she turned her story, you know, into helping other ladies. And I ended up sitting by her mother that day that I took a leap of faith to just get on a train and go to Atlanta, somewhere I'd never been, no family, no friends. But I knew I had to leave, you know, to get the help. But I was planted with her mother. Didn't know where I was going to go when I got off that train, y'all. But then China Bethany, her mother, told China what my story. And she was like, well, you know, just come stay at our house for the weekend and we'll figure it out. She got me with another group of ladies. And instead of them forcing me to go to work, they wanted to make sure that I was okay mentally, because they was like, dang, you took a trip to Atlanta. Because you knew, you know, and so that's where the molding began, because these ladies had been through the fire themselves. You know, they had been through some things that they knew that God put me in their path. They wasn't, she thinks she's pretty, so we're going to tear her down and we're going to let her come around us raggedy and look. No, they taught me how to put my wig on. They taught me how to do my makeup. They taught me that every day I got up and looked in that mirror and this is what you speak over your life. You know, they taught me these things versus me going to my home church where I was going to church as a kid, spent all my time, did my tithes, did my offerings and donations, but they turned their backs on me. So people want real. People want what they can feel, because if I go in front of one of those guys who's getting ready to come home, I can read them. Been there, done that. So then that gives me time to say, well, you know what? He's a little, you know, he don't feel me too much. You know what? Maybe I need to just kind of, you know, clear the air for me, you know, maybe say something that might break the ice. But you don't know this if you ain't no returning citizen to know what it's like to be sitting in a room not knowing what's going to happen. Or to know that I just went in front of a judge and these people making me take a darn plea, and I know dang long well I didn't do what they said. You feel me? So it's totally our network of people, and just like doctors and lawyers and therapists and you have professors that teach, everyone has their person. Just like we have to have people for our people, because nobody can tell us better than someone who's been there, done that.
Kimberly, people I've helped. That's because I was homeless. I knew the situation. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah. You know, and that you're saying that too, I'm looking at, I went through AAA. I want to share right quickly. I went through AAA, 2009, right around when Obama came into the office. So I'm like, hey. Now, I've been out there doing some of everything, right? But alcohol was my biggest problem because I did nothing without alcohol. If I didn't have my drink, I did none of the other drugs. So I figured if I could just get to the root of my problem, which was alcohol. And sure enough, years later, now today, I know that was my biggest problem. I don't do anything if I don't mess with alcohol. So all of that's done. But back in the day, when I went there and everybody else was coming in for all different kind of drugs and stuff, they were going to this program. Now, we had two teachers. We go from one class to another, right? And so this one instructor was from the hood. You know, I forget her name, and she's like, yeah, you know, I've been there, done this. I used to be where you guys are. And everybody will pile into her classroom because that's where I figured they could relate to her and stuff. Now, next door, we had another instructor. She's from Haiti. Now, she read from the book. Well, do not touch these drugs because we're reading from a textbook. And they asked her, have you ever experienced any drugs? And they put that woman down so bad. They did everything but threw eggs and tomatoes at her. So one day, and I just wanted to scream one day because I felt like this. I felt like you're coming here to this program for help. Who are you to choose who helps you? Who helps you? So I think it's balance. I think we have to be adults enough and be balanced and know that, hey, even though she hasn't been through it, and you know what I'm saying? She is still trying to help. And, you know, I felt so bad for her. They did everything but except wait outside to jump on her in the parking lot. They made her feel so bad, I'm telling you, just because she didn't do drugs. So that opened up my eyes to that we can't pick and choose where we need help. We're coming for help, so why pick and choose? As long as she's positive and she's putting out that information and trying to help, let's not put her down like that, you know, him or her. What do you guys think about that?
I'm with you, you know. I was gang related, you know, so I was vice lord, you know. So going into the prison, nobody knew it, though. And then one of the captains, all of my business logos was a crown, and it had, like, the royalty, you know, kind of. And she saw an open palm, like, at the bottom of the wreath, at the bottom of my logo, and she knew, you know. But when it got taken to the warden, I've never been in trouble for no gang. I told him, yeah, I was a part of an organization, but I'm not a part of no crime. I'm not a part of that, you know, because what I would do, you know, I would do balanced interruption meetings, you know, when I grew up out of a gang and I had my mortgage company. I just wanted to do something positive because it was about a sisterhood then when I joined as a kid after being molested, being raped. You know, it was part of a sisterhood because all the girls in my neighborhood was a part of this group and they all had been molested and raped too. So, you know, I wanted to be the one that, you know, teach people now about balanced interruptions, about, you know, speaking out about, you know, femininity, you know, things that's happening that shouldn't happen. You know, I go and talk to the adolescents and the young girls about, you know, their worth, their self-worth, you know, but when they thought that I was a part of a gang, you know, people tried not to allow me to come and speak, like coming back to my hometown, you know, some people, well, we don't know if we want her, but why not? Because where I live, it's nothing but drugs and crime, killing. Younger kids shooting at the side stores and at the hood stores, we call them. You know, so when I go out to the hood store, I'm there ministering. I'm actually there ministering, talking to the youth, talking to the old cats, the old schools that I used to sell drugs to. You know, and they saying, well, hey, Mr. Young, can you do this? But I'm saying, hey, like, okay, this is what you do. Can you come and cut the grass over here where I'm holding my group at tonight? I tell you what, can you just show up to group? I said, and if you show up to group, man, I'm going to feed you for the whole week. How about that? Mm-hmm. You know, just having friend direction and having that light, that beacon of hope, that displays change, that displays I am who I am, but this is who I am. You know, I got to be impossible about, you can't keep doing this, bro. Put them guns down. You know, boy, if I see you, if I hear killing, a guy just about 2 weeks ago, one of the younger vice lord brothers came to me. He said, Miss Kim, he said, you know, I'm trying to do the right thing. I said, what you mean you're trying? I said, either you are or you ain't. It's that simple.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, well, somebody robbed me of a pound of weed, and everybody's mocking me because I didn't knock the boy top off. I said, do you know who it was? And he was like, yeah, I do. I was like, well, first of all, you ain't no killer bread, so you need to chill out because you ain't did nothing. You didn't do nothing when it first happened. So, hey, ain't no point of coming back and talking about what you're going to do.
That's right.
You know, because that ain't what we're going to do, you know. But this is what he said to me. He said, I got a kid. I got a baby. I said, I'm not going to knock you for not being a killer because that's what we wanted. That's what I want you to be. You did right to come and talk to me. You did right by saying you didn't want to do that. I said, because, Gray, if you didn't have a pound of weed to be taken, you should not be selling it, man. You know, because in this game, that's what happens. Maybe you want to consider doing something else. So that gave me the opportunity. Then there was the opportunity for me to minister to him and say, you're going to end up in jail. You're going to end up in prison. You're another black man, another young boy that's going to lose his dad. And you might not, because when you go in, Brent, it's not guaranteed you're going to come out.
There you go. That's right.
Yeah. So we have about 13 minutes, and I do want to give everybody an opportunity. Three things, actually. I want to say thank you to all the listeners right now that are lighting up this board. And I want to ask anybody else if you have any comments or questions before I move on. All right. I appreciate you all just listening, and thank you for the support. It's so necessary, and I'm humbled and so grateful for you. Also, I want to give everybody an opportunity. And even if one of the listeners has something that they want to promote or give out their contact information and what services you provide, even if it's just, hey, my name is Mary, and I do hair on Sundays or Monday through Friday, please just shout out your information, your contact information, what you do, so people out there can reach out to you. Arlene, you want to go first? Because I know you have a radio show, so.
Okay.
Yeah,
sure. Thank you. Thank you so much. I'm also, yes, it's Yerlene's PowerPoint 103.5 right here with Sparky Lee on Blog Talk Radio. That call-in number is 563-999-3618. Monday through Fridays, we normally do interviews. If you're interested in an interview, please reach out to me via email at Earlene, Earline, 51462 at gmail.com, and then we can talk from there. I'm also on LinkedIn as well. Thank you, everybody. Great show, Sparky. Enjoying it so much.
Thank you. It's nothing without the listeners. And I heard somebody else, male voice,
yeah,
I believe.
This is Chalupa, that young
Chalupa.
Lady named Earlene. Earlene, I'm a Lakota from the Pine Ridge Indian Reservation in South Dakota, and I also have a show that's tonight from 5 o'clock
Great.
To 7 Mountain Time. It's called the Indigenous Voices of People. Take my number down. Reach out to me. It's area code 605-517-1547. The second back number, same area code and prefix, 605-517-47. I always try to get an opportunity to come on Little Brother Lawrence's show. But I wanted to invite a lot of you listeners to really take a look at something. I've listened to parts of the show being, you know, open as a responsive for what your tactful way is saying about what you all experienced from being incarcerated and uneducated and all of this stuff that, you know, America has imposed on people. First of all, I'll say it real brief and I'll get off the phone. And Lawrence, when you get a chance, give me a call. I need to chat
sir.
With you on a matter of great importance. But here's the catch, and here's the real thing, people. Tchokel taku ebhekile mila hanska tchawi choeke, hesyums e tchokata kia ewagnake. As was chesne. Ni lakhotam instuk khala hat hokcha helu hapi ta komeni weni tchoki insyon tchokcha. Tchawi choe wanzi lu hakte, kohe yanke. Champetu onji wan khantkhanka ki chi mane to ki wul he ya hoya ke hanta. Oni chinkte na etahan thawache ni thaki. le wolak hote chetki etaku hena wak ha aiklaki yatsukte. Plain and simple. Kind of like, you know, how people would say we're a charity organization. But if you have language, language is the key. And in this day and age, in the year 2022, a lot of us are subjugated to penitentiary, penal complexes, mass incarceration of supreme mandatory lockdowns and so forth. Been there, done that, still living it today. The Pine Ridge Indian Reservation is a penitentiary without guards, without fence line, without timely whistles that blow, like control movement when you're in an institution. That's what a reservation. Our reservation is Prisoner of War Camp 344. Still on the books. So really pay attention. I don't like using the English language, and I'll tell you why when I get off. It's not my language. It never was. It was brought over here and enforced on every people of color, even my own. So now we're all marching to a whistle or a bell that rings like Pavlov's dogs, okay? That's not offensive. It's the truth. And so America has done this in the name of Christianity and in the words of the Savior that supposedly died on a cross and shed his blood for us. Well, maybe so in their culture, but it belongs over there. In America, the sacred pipe is what governs Turtle Island. Thank you all for giving me this opportunity. And Erlene, do contact me, please. Get my phone numbers from Lawrence. And Lawrence, please give them to Erlene. I want to chat with that young lady. And you're all welcome to come on my show tonight. Lawrence, I'll text you the information on how you can share it with everybody. And thank you for allowing me this little brief minute, okay? And I'll see you next week, Lawrence. Good hearing from you all.
Yes, sir. Nice to hear from you, bro.
Thank you.
And, you know, I love that, man. He is very educational and just breaks things down to where, you know, you can't help but just, like, really, like, okay, I got to look into that. And all of it's true. He does not bullshit anybody. And, of course, Kimberly, you want to give your contact information for anybody that wants to help you out, reach out, you know, talk, whatever?
I really enjoyed being on today. And Ms. Erlene, I look forward to joining and listening to you as well. Yeah. And I would love to be a guest on your show at some point. My contact information is 404-386-5290. That is my contact cell. And my email is from prison to purpose, MS for Mississippi, at gmail.com. And my website, I cannot remember the HTTPs because sometimes I have a problem. I have to just kind of send you a flyer, Sparky, so you can put it out there. But if you shoot me an email, you guys, I always will respond back, or my little girl, one of my daughters will respond back within the 72 hours. But, I would love to get support from anyone that may can connect me with other advocacy organizations or any platforms, speaking engagements, or just regular radio blogs for information, or even just talking about, you know, our stories and things that we can do to build, you know, kingdom build, I say, you know, when I say that. So because it's, I just believe in the united we stand, divided we fall. And I always remember that it's nothing about us without us. So, I mean, that's just, those are just some things that I firmly stand on, because it was us that helped get. It was never, you know, it was just by that thing called grace, man, you know, where people, unexpected people, part of my journey, you know, had I not gone that way, I don't think that I would be the woman I am today. So
nice. And thanks. I do want to point something out. you know, when somebody looks at, like, say, Chinupo, when he comes on and speaks about the Indian culture, we can't dismiss any of the information given. We can't sit right. there and decide that this doesn't apply to us because of race, mm-hmm. creed, sex, whatever.
No.
Because history is history. It's repeating itself.
Right.
And what they've
That's
done
right.
to the indigenous people, they have done to the African-Americans, they have done to the whites. Like, it's going down the line. And it's getting
mm-hmm.
to the point that we have to look into every culture, and we have to not just entertain it, but respect it. We have to
right.
understand it so we have a place to go after this. Like, okay,
right.
this has happened before. Same song and dance. Let's move forward. And the other thing is, you know, for the organizations out there, you know, shame on you for feeling threatened by a formerly incarcerated. Shame
mm-hmm.
on you for not
mm-hmm.
wanting to share the piece of the pie, for not wanting to work with other
mm-hmm.
people and to keep it to yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Let me tell you something about recovery and reentry. It is not ours to keep. We have
right.
to give it away. If you don't give it away,
that's right.
you cannot have any for yourself. It is about the people. And for any organization that is shutting people down and putting hurdles in front of others because of selfishness and financial gain, I really do wish you the best, and I will pray for you. But, you know, you are full of crap. And for the
mm-hmm.
and for the advocates doing what you're doing, for the people that spend endless hours and days and months and years pushing this cause and this purpose, thank you so much for the hard work, the dedication, and the sweat and all those tears, because trust me, there's a lot of them.
Yeah.
But, you know, you all are truly amazing, and people behind the scenes that don't get the recognition, I recognize you today. I see you, and we all see you. And, you know, it's unfortunate, but just keep doing what you're doing. Don't get frustrated, because it's those struggles that
mm-hmm.
God is strengthening us and molding us into doing something that is beyond our power, and,
mm.
and that he's given us that purpose and that strength to mold us to do something bigger and greater than ourselves. I promise
right.
you that. This too shall pass. And so listen to Chinupa's radio show. Go on there and listen to what they say, because they speak the truth. They don't lie. Listen to Earlene and what she says and everything that she's talking about, because there's somebody that you may not know that's going through the same thing, or somebody that you know
right.
that is speaking the truth. Don't ever discredit anybody for any purpose. And with that, I will tell the story. Went to a casino. You know, me and my wife go there very often, and, you know, I've always... You hear about these stories of discrimination and racist people, and, you know, you kind of, that's wrong. You know, you sit there and go, it kind of upsets you. But when, you know, my friend from L.A. comes down and visits, my childhood friend, and he is African-American, and we didn't get served for an hour while we watched four families go in there and eat their food and leave. And I'm going to tell you something that really pissed me off, very pissed me off. We walked out. We did not pay for our food. And it's different when you hear these stories, but when you live them and you see it straight in your face, and it's somebody you love, it really changes your perspective on things.
Yeah.
So be kind to people out there. You don't know the struggle that somebody's going through as you're judging them.
Right.
You don't, you know, you're basing something superficial off of, you don't know how much hard work they did to get out of a neighborhood
mm-hmm.
or out of a lifestyle. You don't know what they're suffering from. So be kind, be generous, be the change you want to see. And, you know, if we pass this on, we're all going to be rich morally and with principles.
Mm-hmm.
So live your life, everybody.
Right.
I want to thank all my listeners, all my guests. Check out Earlene on her radio show. You know, everybody here is just beautiful people. And see that you are lovable and you are worth it. And that will shine through people, places, things, and leave them better than you find them. Want to just say thank you. I'm very humbled to be in this position to do what I do, and it just really it makes my heart grow like the Grinch. So I love you guys. Happy holidays.
Love
I will
you
be
too.
On next weekend. Y'all are amazing. Stay blessed. Thank you, Kimberly. Thank
mm-hmm.
you, Earlene. Thank you, Chinupa.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you for all the listeners. And
take care,
y'all. Just keep pushing.
Take
you
care,
too.
Everybody.
You good? All right. Bye, bye, everybody.